We'll leave it at that. Last time, we were talking about 2G networks, which are all about circuit-switched voice connectivity. And so now we're going to see how that has evolved over time into data-driven networks. Okay. So the primary example of implementation of 2G networks is GSM, and so we went into either too much or too little detail, depending on your perspective about GSM. As I said before, it's 6,000 pages of specification. We just hit a few highlights, and we looked at the basic architecture and the components, and so you have BSC or BSS, which controls the radio link between end user and base stations, and then the base stations then connect back to the MSC, which maintains all of the sort of connectivity functions and is responsible for switching the connections out through gateways to originally a public telephone network. Okay. So there's a lot of functionality that goes with maintaining connectivity within the network and then establishing circuits for our calls. And the signaling involved is referred to as what's called the control plane. And that's in contrast to data planes, which deal with the actual transmission of user data. So in this case, the voice signal. And obviously, there's a lot of jobs to do, and they're arranged, again, in a hierarchical or stacked fashion. And so you have radio resource management, which is just about that. How do you manage all of the radio aspects of the connection? Mobility management, how do you track the users as they move through the network? And sort of validate their the validity of their network connection, and then finally when they're making calls, how do you maintain the actual connection? Okay. So again, that's sort of the managerial tasks that have to be done within the system in order to, again, let the user connect to the network and then make calls in the network. Then we can look at, again, the type of data that needs to be sent by the user. And this will, or the type of data that has to travel over, in particular the radio link. And we, again, split that into the type, what's the purpose of the data? So that can either be control functionality, so managing the network and the connections, or sending voice data. And so logical channels describe what the purpose of the data is, and then they're mapped onto physical channels, which are actually a frequency time slot combination. And we saw that there was this fairly complex way of being able to tell at any given point, on any given frequency and time slot, exactly what was being sent as a logical channel. Okay. So, the purpose of today's talk is to see, again, how has this evolved from something which had essentially a single purpose of voice communication, with some slight messaging tacked on, to a data-driven network. Okay, and we'll move through various incarnations. So from sort of relatively minor changes to GSM to sort of more evolutionary changes, and let's see how that's progressed till currently we're at 4G, and you know, there's significant talks going on about what exactly 5G will be.
Okay.
Okay, so again, GSM provided voice connectivity, and you could always send your data over that voice link, you know, like the old style phone modems. Okay. And so you're only, you're limited to the rate at which the voice signal was transmitted, the number of the bit rate for the voice signal. And it was a circuit switched connection, so you paid for the duration of that circuit. So it's an expensive way to send small bits of data anyway. Okay, so one of the first attempts to improve conditions was high speed circuit switched data services. So, essentially all that this did was allow users to be allocated multiple time slots. You were still creating a circuit and having to hold that circuit for, well, the duration of your needs. So, the theoretical maximum that you could get would be 76 kilobits per second, more likely something significantly lower than that. And so you would group these time slots, and then essentially they would follow the same sort of procedures for each, so you'd have a common frequency hopping procedure, etc. So, yeah, again, that makes it easy on the user equipment. And there, then the time slots, the group of time slots, then would be treated as a single connection. That's somewhat problematic for handover, because now you need not one channel, but essentially you need however many time slots you had that would represent the number of channels you need. So you have a much higher probability of blocking when you're moving from cell to cell.
Or even just failing to make the connection to begin with.
Okay, so those data rates are, I think even back then, weren't that impressive, but it was a sign that people were starting to take data more seriously. Okay. GPRS.
Moved now from the Digital Service, significant move in that, moved from sending data over circuit switches to handling packets as their own entities. Okay. And by doing that, they were able to increase the data rates significantly. So, the main idea of GPRS was, again, it was going to be built on top of GSM, but it would add on separate packet handling facilities. Okay. And the goal was to provide IP services, so packet switch services, have the same back ends regardless of your error interfaces, and sort of there was a start of a split between sort of the error interface and the network core. So it worked. It was built on top of GSM, just added packet handling functionality, and so it had the benefits of that packet handling functionality. So it's always on. So you just send your packets. You don't have to set up any special connections first. Users could be charged according to the amount of data sent, and not, again, the duration of the circuit. And, again, that is much better if you have bursty traffic. Okay. And this was rolled out in 2000, so not that long ago. But it was not the time of streaming, so the data being sent would have been of a much more bursty nature. Okay, so again, the GSM structure remained in place, and we just added packet handling, so in the form of the GPRS support node, and this is split into two parts, and one sort of facing the user and then one facing the back end. So the serving GSM is responsible for sending and receiving packets from the user. And then, so sort of parallel functionality to the MSC. And then there is at the other end a gateway, GSN, which interfaces between the cellular network and then unwired back-end packet data network, so the internet. Okay. So this could be done with relatively little changes to the network. The BSC had to have a hardware that could handle packets, and software to just manage everything, and then again, you have the packet handling nodes within the network as well. Okay. Yeah.
And so, it,
as I said, you know, on the one hand, you have something equivalent to the MSC, but now handling packets as opposed to voice connectivity and an interface with the external network, with the wired network. And, of course, the MSC and SGSM can communicate to exchange information about the users.
Okay, so this was our GSM architecture. And, again,
we've added these brown pieces, so packet control units, the SGSM to handle the packets and route them within the network and out. And both the MSC and the SGN, of course, have to sort of validate user functionality.
Okay, so now our channels can be allocated either to data or voice connectivity, depending on availability. And so in exactly how the access or the allocation is done. It's done by statistical multiplexing, as you would expect it, in packet switching in the downlink direction from the network to the user. Well, the network can just queue the packets and send them out on a first-come, first-served basis. And yeah, they have complete control over the resources, so there's no problem. Resource allocation. Now, the problem in the uplink direction is that the user essentially has to be allocated the resources and perform some sort of medium access control. So, if you think back to AO211, and you've got a lot of users, how do they communicate an access point, or in this case, to the base station. And it's actually not completely contention-based. What the users have to do is they have to request a slot to make their transmission. The requests are contention-based, and so we use slotted aloha. And then once the allocation is made, the user is allocated their slot. The allocations are done on a first-come, first-served basis within the within the requests. Okay. So,
essentially, periodically, the network makes the resource allocations and lets the users know based on what requests have built up during that period.
So the channel structure is similar to that of GSM, except now we need all the signaling to do with packet handling as well as voice connectivity. And so essentially pretty much for every control channel there's an equivalent packet control channel.
it allows for multi-slot operation with, again, up to 8 slots per one user. The resources are allocated only for the duration of the packet transmission, and again, the network has complete control over the resources, so we can decide on what basis it's going to allocate those resources. So we can make that decision based on sort of load programs or user needs, user priorities, the type of operation, et cetera, the usual things we might think of. One thing that GPRS is that it still always gives priority for voice traffic. So it's still a voice network that could now accommodate packets. Data as well. The logical channels, again, do the same thing they do for GSM. Okay. So you had this basic setup built on top of GSM, and the question then became, how far could we push our data rates within that sort of setup? And again, can we move towards 3G services, so higher data rates? And so eGPRS, enhanced GPRS, was implemented to provide more or less 3G data rates, but operating in the 2G spectrum, so operating sort of again just sitting on top of GSM. So Edge triples the data rate offered by GSM, and as you might guess, it does that by changing the modulation methods. So instead of sending 1 bit per signaling element, we can send 3 bits per signaling element. So we can do that within, we don't have to change the time slot structures at all. We can keep the basic setup the same. We just, again, modulate different things. All of these systems, again, use rate adaptation depending on the quality of the radio channel. So if you're sitting right under the base station, you can send at full rate. If you're at the edge, then you're going to have to slow your rate down. Okay. And so you get the again, much higher data rates in the 100 kilobit per second, depending on how many time slots you're allocated.
So is the range reduced then, essentially, because of the modulation?
Well, again, that's a complicated thing. Because anytime you send data, you essentially have that same thing going on. So you've got a range at which you can go at these really high speeds, and then as you move farther out,
and that's the adaptive
you
rate.
Get slower, and that's the adaptive rate. I mean, and when I say as you move farther out, that's roughly speaking, because you can always be adjusting power and, you know, there are adjustments to be made, but essentially, roughly, again, your channel quality decreases the farther you go. So that's, no matter what system you have, that's roughly what happens. So they all use this sort of thing. Okay, so
again, the main innovation is to signal using 3 bits per element. And that's only used, again, when necessary, and, you know, there is a cost, and it is sort of more prone to errors. If you don't need it, you can drop back to GSM's basic GMSK modulation. Slow frequency hopping is used as well to again try and protect against the channel effects.
Okay, so again, link quality is controlled using a combination of modulation and channel coding.
The user, the mobile station, has to inform the base station about the quality of the channel, so that then the base station makes a decision about the modulation encoding. There are two possible modulations, so 3-bit and not, and 9 possible coding rates. So again, that's the convolution coding. And so whatever combination you use, obviously, is going to give you a different throughput for your data. Okay, so you have overhead
plus just your basic signaling rate. What changes needed to be made to do this? Well, the transmission, the modulation, the transmission equipment, so how it was modulated, and then again software upgrades to take into account all of these new facilities. Okay. So, doing that, Edge came close, quite close to the UMTS, the 3G data rates required, but it was probably also clear it wasn't going to go much beyond that, and so the next step forward was to to think about how we can improve our AR interfaces, sort of have radical shifts in transmission technology. And doing that requires that you move spectrum, so it's not going to coexist with the current system operating in the current spectrum, but we need to have new spectrum in order to radically change our technologies. Okay. So the services that are labeled specifically 3G are ones that operate in the newly licensed spectrum. Okay. And again, as we saw, depending where you were in the world, different
proposals were made, they were usually, again, evolutionary steps from previous systems. What we're looking at here is one particular implementation, the European implementation of UMPS. And this, again, was viewed as being an evolutionary step from GSM and GPRS networks. Okay.
Now, one problem that,
moving these networks is you can't just, it's not like you flip a switch and everybody moves from their old 2G equipment to the new 3G equipment, but things sort of have to grind along together for some period of time, possibly long periods of time. Okay, so while UMPS is again moving to this new spectrum, it was assumed that it would coexist with GSM and GPRS, and the primary differentiator would be the air interface, so the radio equipment used. The back end would be similar. Okay, so the differences are the data rates achieved and the spectrum in which they're being achieved. Okay. So the 3G standards were specified in IMT 2000, and basically the most significant component, again, was the required data rates, and there are also things about the speeds. They mentioned sort of high-speed mobility of data rates. And so any radio transmission could be certified as being compatible with those rates. And so some would be backwards compatible with the pre-existing 2G standards. Others would not. Again, multiple technologies qualify for as 3G air interfaces, whether or not they're actually implemented as such. So, UMPS is again what we're talking about, and so there's the UMPS terrestrial radio access, it's the radio component of UMPS, and so again that's compatible with the GSM standards, and within this there's a number of possible implementations that we'll see. Again, other wireless standards achieve the same data rate, so DEC is just cordless phone technology, and the wireless broadband also achieved the same types of speeds. And as we noted, WiMAX was actually the first to use some of the most innovative and currently used transmission technology. Okay. So the standards are named according to their channel access methods, but obviously we have to cover all
aspects of radio access. Okay, so again, the idea with UMTS was that the back end would be shared with GSM and GPRS, and so we have our core network. It's going to have both circuit switch and packet switch elements, as we saw before with the GSM and GPRS. And one additional piece was added, the media gateway, and the media gateway was designed to
as an interface with other data networks for the purposes of streaming data. Okay,
and it's a bit of a telephony view of the world in the sense that, you know, provided for data translation from one network to the next. Okay. Okay, so that's mainly shared with GSM GPRS. The
radio access network then is new, operating in our newly licensed spectrum, and so has pretty much all the same functionality as we saw for GSM. We can handle packet and circuit switch traffic, and we rename our base stations as node Bs. The node Bs again are using these more advanced coding, interleaving, modulation, transmission techniques. Our user equipment then, of course, must match the radio equipment of our radio network. And as was
phones are intelligent network, phone services were also catered for.
Okay, so you can see we have the components, our core network has the components as for GSM, and we'll get interface with GSM as well as the media gateway functionality and services functionality as well. And again, fairly complex control system for regulating all of the base stations, the node Bs. Okay, so in terms of, again, control, we see that, we have the same issues as we had before, but now we are dealing with not just circuit switching, but data, you know, explicitly dealing with data as well. And so what we'll see is that we can multiplex sort of multiple signals onto a given channel. And okay. So I seem to have lost the channel. The channels now become more, or the channel structure becomes more complex. At the bottom, we still have a physical channel, so we still have the time slots and frequency pairs to transmit over. But now our logical channels do not fit as neatly into a physical channel. So before, we were essentially, we had the sort of things to do, and we just sort of mapped them directly onto a physical channel, and yes, there's this complexity of knowing what was going on at one time. But now, the amount of data that we're transmitting at any given time may vary, and we can pack multiple logical operations into a single physical channel. So in order to deal with a sort of intermediate layer called a transport channel is defined. Okay. And so now multiple logical channels can be mapped onto a transport channel, and then the transport channel is mapped onto the physical channels. Okay, so you just have an additional layer of complexity in the channel structure. Okay. And again, it is, it just, it's, it becomes that much more complex, although, you know, the purposes are similar to previous. But since we have this, multiple access, we need to sort of define how that multiple access occurs. Okay. So, again, our main change is the AR interfaces, and there's lots and lots of different AR interfaces were defined and built. We are going to just say a few words about one, which is WCDMA. And it was the most common implementation of UMTS. And as one might guess, moves from sort of fairly straightforward modulation techniques and, you know, the access that they provide to a CDMA system. Okay, so code division multiple access, which, as you recall, had the two benefits of sort of providing a spread spectrum modulation technique for the users, and at the same time allowing multiple users to coexist within the same spectrum or bandwidth. Okay. So for WCDMA, we had 5 megahertz wide radio channels. And again, that will give you, didn't write that, but that gives you a certain amount of channels within the spectrum available. Sort of goals of data rates, depending on, again, how close you are to the base station and what your environment was like. The CDMA had a megachip or megabit per second rate, and both time and frequency duplexing were allowed.
And so the CDMA was built on top of direct sequence spread spectrum.
And it improves your spectral efficiency. So again, you're allowed to send a lot more data within the same spectrum. You can combine it with other modulation techniques so you can then send multiple bits per signaling element as well. As we noted, now adjacent cells all share the same frequency. They essentially share all the frequencies. So up to a point, that leads to improved capacity. So our original system had to keep cells using the same frequency separate from each other. Now they could only use some subsets of the channels available, and I can use the whole spectrum. That also means that you can have what's called soft handover, where the user is actually communicating with multiple base stations at the same time. Security was improved in that the CDMA codes provide coding for the data, provide a form of coding for the data. Okay, so again, 3G, you wouldn't really want to be streaming your Netflix over it, but it sort of moved a lot closer to that and was sort of evolving in parallel with, again, these sort of newer data applications and people wanting sort of more data-driven applications. Again, the natural evolution from there is in terms of faster, more data all the time. And also a sidelining of voice connectivity. Voice can be viewed as yet another IP service. Okay. And that's what essentially happens in 4G. We have a push for, again, higher and higher data rates. And again, these things are all sort of moving along. They build one from the other. So the ITU, again, developed the 4G standard, referred to as INT Advanced. And the primary objective was higher data rates. So at speed, you want 100 megabits per second and up to gigabits while not moving. You want to improve internetworking. So be able to move from one type of network to the next. Not entirely convinced that works yet. It's not on my phone. But you want to support roaming, so from network to network, which is like the main sum. Agreement about basic operating procedures. You want quality of service is becoming more of a concern now. Okay. So we know we mentioned when we started the module that not all applications have the same data requirements from the network. They vary in terms of whether it has to be correct. They vary in terms of what speeds and what data rates you need, what bit rates, packet rates you need. Okay. And some of the most needy are streaming media, so voice streams, video streams, things that have to play out continuously. Okay. And so in order to deal with those, particularly in a wireless context where things are constrained, it's important to be able to serve different applications differently. And so I've sort of hived that off into a separate lecture, but we will look at how quality of service is handled within different types of networks. Okay, so again, we're assuming we have an all IP core network. And that, again, we can interoperate with multiple different wireless standards, so, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, etc. Okay. So, GPP, again, the sort of UMTS European crowd proposed the evolution of UMTS to 4G standards through what was called long-term evolution, and as morphed to long-term evolution advance. And as I said before, at this point, all of the other worldwide bodies have rowed in behind that standard. So when LTE was proposed, there were CDMA-based efforts as well, but eventually those were checked in for LTE. LTE was handled as LTE Advanced. Now it's LTE Advanced Pro. It's handled as a series of releases. Those that are up to release 9 is LTE, and it's not considered to fully meet the 4G requirements. LTE Advanced, which came as release 10, does fully meet the requirements. And again, these have moved on, and we're now looking at meeting 5G requirements, and it's anticipated by 2020 and we'll have 5G standards, again, evolutions of LTE.
Okay.
So again, the main changes proposed for LTE regard the error interface. So that's where you can increase your data rates, and so obviously that's where the changes occur. Having said that, the back-end architecture evolves as well, and by and large has been streamlined from the UMTS offerings. Okay. So the standards have sought to cleanly divide now the two components, the radio access network and the core network, so each of those can then evolve separately without sort of a problem. Okay. So, again, I think the main change to the core is simplification and mainly having to do with assuming that everything now is IP-based.
Okay.
Having said that, support still needs to be provided for sort of coexistence of our multiple standards. Okay, so the current setup looks something like this. We have, so on our radio side, the EUCRAN, which consists of now evolved node Bs, and the intelligence for sort of managing the channels has actually now been moved into the node Bs, so you don't have a controller that's sort of making all the decisions sort of centrally, but the decisions are sort of distributed between the node Bs, so the node Bs now communicate amongst themselves to manage channels. So other side, we have in the core, we have a serving gateway, which again is handling the data traffic. We have mobility management entity, which is handling our control messaging. The home subscriber service is a database, again, like the home location, renaming it the home location register. And we now have, again, just a single gateway out to packet data networks. So the interface between the radio network and the core is defined, as always, by interfaces. So the S1 is the global interface, which is broken down into multiple components. So S1U governs the data interface, and then S1MME governs the control interface. Okay.
And, well, actually the one I
didn't mention is then X2 is governing the interface between the Nodes and their negotiations.
So, again, the components do, you know, more or less what you would expect them to do. The mobility management entity controls mobility and security. So it controls the user's access to the network and their, and tracks their progress through the network. It manages handovers, either, again, between cells, between those components of the network, and to and also between different networks. Okay. And it coordinates with the HSS to retrieve the user data that needs to do this. So if it's, you know, in, you know, authentication and location data. The home subscriber server, again, is the database that maintains the user information. And so it supports all the things you would expect, so authentication, set call, call setup, etc. The serving gateway handles packet data and interfaces between, again, the radio network, which obviously initially receives the data, and the core of the network, and moves the data from user through the core and out the gateway, and that then the gateway will then connect to the internet. As I said before, the signaling is handled, is defined through signaling interfaces, and there's one for the control signaling and one for the data signaling. Okay, so one interesting development in terms of our cell management is that to meet spectrum efficiency targets, LTE uses universal frequency reuse. Okay, so all of the cells use all of the frequencies. And of course, this is interesting because it's not a CDMA system. Okay, it's actually OFDM based. So we have split everything into channels. And obviously, you have cells next to each other using the same channels, you have problems. And so that has to be managed, and it's actually managed in a CDMA-like fashion. Okay. And so each, so the management of sort of interference, and again, this is mainly sort of an issue at the edges of cells, so if you have two users using the same channels right next to each other, which you can get, then you're in trouble. The management of that is referred to as inter-cell interference coordination. And the main technique used is what's called ICI randomization. And the
signals sent between user and base station. And we call it, and I've used the word code word here because they've been encoded for all the usual channel encoding reasons. In addition to that, they are scrambled using a code based on the cell ID. So each cell has its own code. That's very similar to what happens in CDMA, except if you think about it, for CDMA, there's a code per user. Okay, so the more users you have, the harder it is to find codes. Here, you have a code per cell. All the users within the cell are using the same code. Users in another cell are using a different code. So within a cell, each user is assigned a separate channel, and they're all encoded and they're all scrambled in the same way. In the next cell over, the user could be allocated the same channel, but it'll be scrambled in a different and hopefully relatively orthogonal way. So that means that each user can decode its own, extract its own data while leaving off other user's data. Okay, so that would be the primary method used for dealing with interference. There are other possibilities. If the user can decode interference signals as well, then it can recreate the signal and hence eliminate it. But this isn't usually possible because, again, we don't want one user decoding somebody else's data signal. Additional to that, cells can, again, negotiate for the use of channels and frequencies. Okay. So, the base stations communicate amongst themselves, so they can exchange information to relevant to the assignment of channels to specific users to try and avoid, again, two people near each other having the same channels. Okay. Okay, so you're going to get tired of seeing these channel pictures. Again, my only point here is that, like UMTS, channels are divided into logical transports and physical channels. Okay. So LTE uses versions of OFDM in both uplink and downlink. On the downlink, it uses OFDM combined with some multi-bit signaling modulation technique. Okay. Our signaling element then again is a time and frequency slot. And these slots are actually allocated in the slots are then grouped together Certain time duration and frequency spread, and the group is referred to as a resource block, and they're allocated on a block level, not an individual slot level. Okay. Again, quality of service is negotiated with the network, and how many blocks are allocated is a matter of your negotiation. For the first time, MIMO is used. There is something. Okay, I think that shouldn't be MIMO, but MIMO is used. But in the uplink, again, we use OFDM. They're pre-coded versions which sort of isolate the subcarriers, and again, this is for optimization of the power control, but if the SCFDMA has low peak to average power ratios, and that improves the quality of the signal. Okay, now we're on to MIMO. MIMO is used. And in the uplink direction, we can use multi-user MIMO, so we generally assume that the mobile users have the same, this is LTE. The assumption was the users would have a single antenna, and so multiple users can transmit on the same resource block, again, assuming that the base station has multiple antennas and can use them to distinguish between the signals. Okay. In the downlink direction, various configurations are being considered. I think 2x2 exists at this point, and it's used for spatial diversity, not to improve the data rates. So, again, just to wrap up LTE, it's represented in sort of a significant change from the 3G systems, mainly in the form of, again, a new and improved air interface. And LTE, again, was defined, never quite met 4G standards. And so LTE Advanced then did evolve to actually meet these 4G standards. And again, this is this occurred in the release 10. So what changed for LTE Advanced? The standards were finally met. And basically, it was a collection. It was the same basic ideas were used as for LTE, but we just did a few cleverer things with it, mainly in the form of aggregating carriers. Okay. So the
basis, you know, we improve our OFDM and our MIMO, and we use what's called carrier aggregation. And so, you know, same thing that we were using for older systems, we allow sort of users to use more channels. And we can have those channels either contiguous or non-contiguous. Okay. Another sort of trick used to improve user reception is what's called coordinated multipoint. And so, you know, again, before, a user would essentially be talking to a single base station. Now, if the user is sort of between base stations, they can actually have connections with multiple
E-node Bs at the same time. Okay.
And so, again, the signal is received from multiple stations, and as you can see, or as you can think, you need to, the stations that need to coordinate, you know, in order to appropriately process that signal. The configuration of the cells has changed as well, with both a lot of thought going into sort of smaller microcells to different size cells, and also in allowing for relaying. So you can now have multiple hops through between the base station and the mobile station. Okay. And so relays fully process the signal and retransmit it. So again, you can think, you know, you don't have to be as close to the base station now. If there's a relay, it will improve the quality. And so you can have a number of types of relays, ones that essentially are base stations or just appear like base stations to the user equipment. Obviously, you want the user to always sort of only have one type of interface, but what goes on behind that is up to the network. Okay. So, again, it's an interesting journey, and this is more or less where we are to date, and we've, yeah, that evolution has happened, again, since 2000, and in that time frame, you know, again, there's just been huge advances in the ability of the networks to cater for data traffic. Okay. So the question then becomes, where are we going from there? And the obvious answer is 5G. We're not terribly creative about our naming. And the specification for 5G, the requirements have been defined in the IMT 2020 recommendation. Okay. And so the question is,
what's in the recommendation and what standards are there to meet that. Okay. And again, 3GPP is leading the standardization. And next year, we should have release 15, LTE Advanced Pro. This won't fully satisfy IMT 2020. Release 16 scheduled for 2020 is envisaged will satisfy IMT 2020. Okay, so just as a summary, we can think that there's a number of requirements for our various standards. So we have, sort of in the gray, we have IMT Advanced, and again, it would have defined targets for latency, mobility, spectrum efficiency, data rates, peak data rates, traffic capacity, etc. And sort of interesting that I didn't even know that was in the network energy efficiency. And so 2020, again, you can see that in all of those aspects requires sort of greater performance, okay, and again by some factor, so 3 times the spectrum efficiency, 10 times the capacity, 20 times the peak data rate, 10 times the average data rates, higher speeds, etc.
And so the question is, one question is, why do we need all this? Well, as a user, you say, well, I want to stream HD video instead of just, you know, low quality. But in general, they've been talking about 3 areas of sort of application areas, usage scenarios. So we have enhanced mobile broadband. So that's the average user wants to stream their HD video. We see an awareness of IoT coming through. So we want to be able to support massive machine-type communications. So if we have thousands of, you know, whatever, you know, devices, we want to be able to them to be able to communicate, and again, that's a significantly different traffic type than for broadband. Okay, and we also want to cater for safety critical and mission critical applications. So, if you think, say, smart cities, and you want to manage your traffic, or if there's some accident, then you want to be able to handle that through LTE or 5G. Okay, and just to note that the requirements for those applications differ. Okay, and so, for instance, if you have your ultra-reliable, low-latency communication, the primary requirement for that is on the latency side of things. We're talking more signaling rather than streaming data, so the data rates aren't so important. Machine-type communication, well, the main thing envisaged is there's just going to be a lot of them. Okay, so the
important thing is to be able to manage a lot of connections. Again, maybe not sending a lot of data per connection, but you got just loads. Okay, and again, for the user, mobile broadband, density is not so important because there's only so many users. Latency, well, you can handle some delay in the network anyway, but obviously data rates are significant.
Okay, so it should be interesting as you know, to see sort of how all of that develops. So that's it for today. And next week I'll be sending Anderson in, but not at 10 o'clock. I'll let you know when he'll come and he'll talk to you about, you know, again, the next assignment. And if you have any problems with the first assignment, yeah, well, try and contact him before that, but if you still have problems, definitely bring it up next week. Okay, so I'll see you guys soon.